Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've invited author Dr. Neil McLaren on the program to talk about his new book, Humanizing Madness, Psychiatry and the Cognitive Neurosciences, an application of the philosophy of science to psychiatry. Neil McLaren, who prefers to be called Doc, and that's what I will address him as in this interview, has been an MD and a practicing psychiatrist since 1977. Around 1980, he developed an interest in the philosophical side of psychiatry, and after further study, enrolled as a doctorate student jointly in philosophy and psychiatry. Since then, he has undertaken a far-reaching research program and has continued to publish his findings in various philosophical papers. For 6 years, while working in the Kimberley region of Western Australia, he was the world's most isolated psychiatrist. He is now in a solo private practice with interest in military and forensic psychiatry and the psychiatry of post-traumatic stress state. He is married with 2 children and lives in a tropical house hidden in the bush near Darwin, Australia, way far out there. So I'm just happy to have Dr. McLaren on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Doc.
Thank you, Anita. Tropical here at the moment. I've just got up and the sun's shining brightly, but we're expecting more monsoonal rain today.
Wow.
A bit different from where you are, I think.
Yes, it's your summer right now, isn't it?
Yes, but since we're in the north of the country, we're actually in the tropics.
Oh.
We're actually the same distance from the equator as Venezuela, as Caracas in Venezuela.
Oh, so you're in that kind of a climate region there.
Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yes,
well, in the U.S. where we are, we're pretty much socked in with cold weather, so we're very envious of you at the moment.
Yes, I don't handle cold weather very well.
No. So I'm really interested in your book, Doc, Humanizing Madness, and I'd like for you to just begin by telling us about your original decision to get into the field of psychiatry and why this field was of such interest to you.
That's a very difficult question. When I started medical school in prehistory, I had never heard of psychiatry, and I took an interest in it when we did our psychiatric term in fifth year of medical school. And then when I graduated, I intended to go into neurosurgery, but just at the last minute, they gave me an extra term of psychiatry, and I was fascinated and have never regretted choosing this career. And I was always interested in philosophical matters, so it was a very simple matter to weld the two together.
Now, I understand that the beginnings of this book actually came from your original educational experiences back in the 70s, and I'd like to hear more about the model that you experienced at that time that really didn't make sense to you, because this really is the basis of your work at the moment.
That's correct. Training we had in the 1970s was quite extensive, but a lot of it didn't make any sense to me, in particular because people were making claims about brain states in psychiatry, which I knew from my training in neurosurgery was simply not true. At the same time, there was still a lot of emphasis placed on psychoanalytic work and on behaviorism. So we would go from one lecture to the other, a lecture in the biology of mental disorder, then a lecture in the psychoanalytic theory of mental disorder, and then finally cap it off with something from a behavioral psychologist. And I decided very early that none of this could be true unless one of them was true, but more likely none of them were true. People were making claims which were incompatible. And so that forced me to start to look for a proper scientific theory for psychiatry, and it was very quickly evident that there wasn't one at that stage. So that meant that I then had to move outside psychiatry and educate myself in philosophy, which I did after I'd graduated in psychiatry. I went back to university and studied undergraduate philosophy, then postgraduate, and I've continued in that vein ever since.
What areas of philosophy did you find most interesting?
The core units were philosophy of mind, philosophy of science, and of language. And I have to say that the philosophy of language was conceptually the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life.
Oh, is that right?
I had to do an exam in it, and I was 34, and I remember sitting there at the end of the exam looking at the other, you know, the 20-year-olds in the exam room, and I was thinking, I'm too old for this. But I passed.
Oh, no. Well, great. So tell us about this book, Humanizing Madness, and why you actually decided to write this book. It's been a long time in the process, hasn't it?
It has been a long time in the process. I've had many attempts to put it together, and each one of them was rebuffed. I could not get a publisher. Being Australian, of course, we look for Australian publishers, but in the last 20 years, the Australian scientific publishing industry has just died. It's been taken over by foreign companies, and all decisions about what will be published are made in London and New York. So I then approached the big international publishers, but they will not touch an unknown writer, and it doesn't get much more unknown than living in Darwin. And finally, I was picked up by a small specialist publisher in Michigan. I'd not heard of them when they contacted me, and I don't regret it for a moment. It's been very rewarding dealing with this small company rather than one of the big ones.
Mm-hmm. Is that Loving Healing Press that you're...
That's correct.
Yeah.
Although they've set up a separate division for this work.
Wonderful.
Now, the book itself has three parts. The first part is the standard philosophical analysis of all the theories available in psychiatry today. That's very interesting. I like that sort of work. It's good fun just to sit down and tear somebody else's work to bits. That's the easy bit.
Mm-hmm.
The second part is to look at all the major philosophies of mind available, and really there are only two available today, that's functionalism and natural dualism, and out of those I've concluded that only the latter, natural dualism, has any chance of success. And finally, I've developed a theory using natural dualism and the work of Alan Turing, who was one of the pioneering researchers in computers, to build a theory that's appropriate for psychiatry today. So the final section, I apply that theory to psychiatry, and the results are very dramatic. Suddenly things start to fall into place, and the theory explains itself as it goes along. That was very exciting.
Oh, great. So who is your intended reading audience for this book?
Intended audience is anybody who feels that mental health is a significant issue. Essentially, I would have thought that is anybody with a caring bone in their body and enough education to be able to read some philosophical analysis.
Okay. What is the response that you're getting so far with your book? I mean, it seems pretty cutting edge, and there's, you know, the whole field of psychiatry at this point is so ingrained in these older models. I would imagine that, you know, the establishment wouldn't really readily accept new theories.
That's very true. The response falls clearly into two camps. On the one side, there's an email I got the other day from a chap in Cardiff in Wales in the UK who was very excited by the work and wanted to know a whole lot more. The other response is yet another rejection slip from a major psychiatric journal.
Mm.
And this just goes on and on. The psychiatric establishment normally will not answer my letters or emails.
Not at all.
That's normal.
Really?
Not at all. They do not acknowledge receipt of them.
Oh, that's amazing. What do you think that is? Is it the politics? Or are they just completely unwilling to even go there? They're so set in their ways. What do you think it is?
The standard answer, I suppose, would be you'd need to ask some of them.
Okay.
The message I get back is you're rocking the boat. Everything is fine. We know what we're doing. We don't need criticism. Now, this is the very antithesis of the model of scientific progress. which is that there is only progress in science by criticism of the status quo. Okay, I am criticizing the status quo, and by rights, I should be listened to. Whether I'm right or wrong is up to other people to decide. But if I put up a viewpoint which is critical of the status quo, then by rights, people are bound to listen to that.
To listen to it. Do you think in these models that you basically don't think work or don't make sense to you, do you think there's a possibility that any of these have a place anywhere anymore?
There are elements in each of the models which my model extracts and recasts in different terms. So my model is essentially a cognitive model. That is to say, it treats humans as thinking creatures with emotions, etc., etc. So we're not just biological preparations. And there are, as I say, there are elements in each model which are worth saving. For example, the Freudian concept of ego defense mechanisms, that has a validity. But I can explain that in cognitive terms very, very much more economically than the Freudian model could.
Mm.
And so goes for behaviorism. There are certain elements of behaviorism which are worthwhile, but they need to be recast in a cognitive model, which, of course, behaviorism couldn't do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what are your thoughts on the biology model?
The standard biological model of psychiatry, which is rampant these days,
mm-hmm.
is, in my view, grossly inadequate. It is based on a concept that is the reduction of mind to matter, which was discarded philosophically a long time ago. And yet, you have books like the one I'm just reaching for now, which is, Psychiatry, Psychoanalysis, and the New Biology of Mind by Eric Kandel from Columbia University in New York.
Uh-huh.
Now, Kandel, you may be aware, is a neurophysiologist who won the 2000 Nobel Prize for his work. And he bluntly states throughout this book that something he calls radical reductionism will transform psychiatry into a bioscience. And I don't believe this is true. He does not define radical reductionism. I have defined reductionism and applied it to the model of human mind, and it doesn't work. I could not get any response from Kandel on this point.
Mm. Are there any books out there or any models out there that at all come close to what you're coming up with or what you're talking about?
Yes, my work is a cognitive model.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of models of cognitive psychology.
Okay.
In fact, they're all sort of looking at the problem from slightly different points of view, but they all use common elements. So the notion that we have minds, that our minds operate according to certain fundamental principles, is fairly widespread. I don't think there's any problem with that. I'm not proposing anything totally new or radically new in that respect. What I have done is draw a line directly from the most fundamental cellular elements right through to mind and emotion. That's the first time that's ever been done.
Oh, that's very, very interesting. So do you offer protocols in your book?
This book had to be limited to 120,000 words.
Yeah.
The original one, as you understand, I'm sure, every book has to be pruned down.
Mm-hmm.
So all I could do in the third section was offer a brief account of how to apply this type of model to standard problems in psychiatry. For example, rather than saying that schizophrenia is a biochemical defect of the brain, my model says that it is in fact a self-perpetuating state of psychic imbalance or psychological imbalance, and that's completely different from the standard biological model.
Very, very different.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Did you know that audiobooks are the fastest growing publication in the book publishing industry with over $1 billion in sales annually? And did you know that over 40 million audiobooks were sold last year? This clearly shows that millions of avid readers enjoy listening to books in their cars, while at work, traveling, and even while exercising or walking. Not only that, many individuals with vision issues rely on audiobooks to access the literary world. If you are an author interested in taking the next step with your book and tapping into an entirely new audience, we can help you turn your manuscript into a professionally produced audiobook. Visit us at readerviews.com and click on the Services for Authors tab in the top menu bar. There you will find a list of services we provide, plus a link to get the information you need to turn your work into an audiobook. The potential of the audiobook has been proven and may just be the ideal next step for you in promoting your masterpiece. Go to readerviews.com today.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
So tell us about your theory of natural dualism. How can you describe that theory so we can, just the layperson can understand that?
It's not actually my theory. The the idea of dualism has been around since humans were first around, the idea that there is a thing called the mind and there is a thing called the body and that they are in some vital sense very, very different, but at the same time also closely and intimately related. So the dualist model is usually attributed to the French philosopher René Descartes, but in fact he simply elaborated it and made it much more thorough and organized. So the idea then that there is an immortal or supernatural mind is not accepted in science these days. Science is a materialist ontology, and that simply says that there's nothing in the universe beyond matter or energy and the informational states that control them. Now, if you define mind as one of those controlling informational states, suddenly you've got a natural theory of mind, and it is dualist. That is to say, mind and body are not the same thing. They are very, very different, but they are also intimately related. So the theory of natural dualism in those words actually probably belongs to an Australian philosopher called David Chalmers, who was at University of California and then later in Arizona. He's come back to Canberra now.
Interesting. So where does consciousness, the idea of consciousness, fit in with your model?
The idea that we are conscious beings is absolutely central to any cognitive model, and you can't propose that there is mental activity without there being some field in which that mental activity takes place. But the old-fashioned 70s idea of consciousness as something mystical, no, we want to get rid of that totally. We don't like any mysticism at all in the materialist framework.
Okay. So what are your thoughts then on, but say, some of the philosophy coming from different countries like India or China, some of the traditional models and therapies that they've used? Do you kind of not agree with any of those?
Every country, every culture throughout history has had its thinkers, and every group of thinkers is going to have one person at least who focuses on the idea of what are we, where do we come from, how do we function, where are we going? And each country will discover insights. Each nation, each culture will discover insights. Most of those rediscover the same insights, but occasionally somebody comes up with something totally new. And every major culture throughout history has reached the conclusion we are some sort of thinking creature. It's only modern, hardline Western biologism which is trying to eradicate that notion, to turn the notion of mind into some aspect of brain, and that is unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
So I accept that all cultures have got something valid to say. As it happens, we've just got back from a holiday in Thailand, and I'm very sympathetic to a lot of the ideas within the formal philosophy of Buddhism, in the sense that they say distress comes from attachments. Well, that's a very powerful cognitive idea, and that one is widely used throughout the Western world these days.
Isn't that interesting? So it's fascinating how some of these more deeply spiritual practices can be applied to something, you know, like psychology and like psychiatry.
The idea that humans are simply biological preparations, which is the dominant ethos in the Western world these days, is, in my view, completely inadequate to the task of explaining human distress.
Mm.
I don't believe simply saying to somebody, oh, you're unhappy, here, take these and come back in a month. I don't believe that does anybody any justice. It's not how I practice psychiatry at all.
Mm-hmm.
My prescription rate for drugs is very low by Australian standards, and our prescription rates are lower than the American prescription rates.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe you can get very good results in ordinary clinical psychiatry. And remember, that's what I do 45 hours a week.
Yeah.
9 hours a day. I sit in an office and I see unscreened mentally ill people referred to me by their general practitioners and by other agencies. So I'm very, very familiar with orthodox psychiatry as it's practiced in the shop front, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I'm also very aware of the different trends around the world, and I genuinely do not believe that biological reductionism can give a valid account of human distress.
Do you think more countries are starting to go towards the more cognitive model and getting away from just the prescription? I mean, not in the U.S. because obviously, you know, the whole pharmaceutical industry is just out of control right now. But is there any other countries that are really on the forefront of what you're talking about?
This what you just said is actually about two PhD
yeah.
theses. That question.
Fortunately, we don't have that much time.
I don't have that much life left.
Yeah, okay.
As they say, that's a critically important question. The one thing you've got to remember is that the influence of the United States is very powerful,
mm-hmm.
and in countries like Australia, and you need to remember that the average intellect in Australia is exactly the same as it is in the United States, and the average education in Australia is actually better than in the United States, but Australians will defer to Americans just by virtue of the fact that you come from the Northern Hemisphere.
Mm.
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So this pendulum is swinging in the world, and it still has a way to go. Gradually, more and more practitioners have to become aware that there are gross deficiencies in the model that they have been taught. And then eventually the awareness will build up to the point where people want to overthrow the major model, the dominant model. This, of course, is Thomas Kuhn's model of scientific progress, and I think it will come to pass in psychiatry. I'd like to think that I have something to play in that role.
I think you do too. It sounds like you're almost thinking that a revolution will have to happen.
That is not a word I fond of using, but in fact, yes, that is what is needed, a dramatic awareness throughout the psychiatric community that the current model is grossly inadequate, that people cannot stand up and say, as Kandel does, that something called radical reductionism will solve psychiatry's problems without showing how and what radical reductionism is.
Mm.
And he's never done that. None of them ever have.
Mm-hmm. How effective is your model and how you put it into your practice? You're obviously a very busy psychiatrist, even though you're living in such a far remote area. How effective is your protocol in your own private practice?
You can only look at my figures compared with the Australian national figures and standard state mental hospital figures. Because we have a semi-socialized form of medicine here where everybody is covered by a national health insurer,
mm-hmm.
all patients' figures are put straight into the national statistics, and every practitioner gets a copy of those, and he's shown exactly where he stands in relation to the national averages. Now, the costs of my treatment are about 40 to 60% below the national averages. And I don't admit people to hospital because hospitals are state responsibility. They don't actually come through the national insurers' figures.
Mm.
So if you factor that into, I'd be treating patients for approximately 25% of the national average.
Wow. So what are the anticipated effects that you're expecting from your work and from this model that you're putting forth in Humanizing Madness?
What I'd like to do is see a shift away from the idea that mental disorder is simply brain disorder to the notion that humans in distress have got very powerful intra-psychological reasons to be in distress, and that must be tackled on a psychological level. So the idea that people with mental disorder simply need to be given tablets and then put into some sort of socializing program and all will be well, that idea has to go. And individuals have to have a tailor-made program, which is the responsibility of one person to see it right from the beginning through to the end. It goes back to an older-fashioned style of treatment where one person is treated by one practitioner, and the practitioner, of course, has to be responsible within the profession.
That's a great point. When do you feel that we will see a change in the next 25 years in the psychiatric field?
I think the biological pendulum is getting awful close to the end of its swing. There is increasing restiveness among young psychiatrists and trainees throughout the world. They have been indoctrinated, and I use that word advisedly, have been indoctrinated in a particular model of mind, the biological model, and they are starting to see its deficiencies. And gradually the pressure will build up for radical change.
What an insightful interview this is, Jock. I'm just so happy to have had you on the program. What is your website? I know you have a blog out there.
It's www.futurepsychiatry.com.
Okay.
And I'm trying to put more and more material on that, but I'm also at the moment busy organizing a trip to the United States. I've got lectures booked for early April, so we're trying to put together a quick tour of the United States, which I know is a bit of a contradiction for a country that's as big as that.
Yeah, but
I'll be there in early April and traveling around trying to get as much exposure to the ideas as possible.
So will you be going to universities? Where are you going to be touring?
Mostly it's universities and major psychiatric training centres. It's proving a little bit difficult to organise from here, but that's just a fact of life.
Yes.
The strange thing is it's proving a lot easier to organise this tour in the United States than it is to get anything in Australia. So far I've had one preliminary inquiry from my own country, and they withdrew that when they realised that I couldn't actually pay my own way that far. It was 4,000 kilometres, and they expected me to pay my home, the whole of my own way, even though they have a training budget.
Oh, gosh. So. Well, you're ahead of your time, I think, Jock.
Yeah, well, I always take the point of view that people have got to catch up.
That's
what I say.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program today. Did you have any final thoughts you want to share? We do have a little bit of time left.
There's lots and lots of thoughts, and I think perhaps the thought I would like to share is that this is not dry, boring, technical disputation. This is very, very real, exciting work which has immediate application to humans, and it is not so specialized that non-psychiatrists can't understand it. For example, if a non-psychiatrist picks up the American Journal of Psychiatry, they wouldn't know where to start. But the whole point of this work is that I start with the most fundamental principles of human behavior and take a person step by step through it so that everybody can see if there's any mistakes in the reasoning. Anybody with a reasonable education, and that would in America mean your college education, liberal arts education, should be able to read this book without too much trouble and make their own decisions.
Great. Fascinating information. Thank you so much, Jock, for coming on the program today, and best of luck to you. And I hope that you bust down some doors when you're here in the U.S. and that your tour goes wonderfully and you get good reception from Americans.
Well, thank you very much. I hope I'll be able to drop into Austin and see you.
Yes, thank you. All right, Doc, thank you so much, and take care. All right, listeners, there you go. What a very, very interesting interview today. This has been Dr. Neil McLaren, also known as Jock. The book, Humanizing Madness, can be purchased through his website, futurepsychiatry.com, and as well, I believe, through online booksellers. So thank you, folks, for listening to Inside Scoop Live once again. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.